So I'll begin by saying I'm Claire Coyne. I'm interviewing Dudley Walter Ginn near Harpenden on Tuesday the 30th of September 2014 for the Temple of Mithras Oral History Project. So Dudley, if I could just ask you to introduce yourself with your full name.
Hello, I'm Dudley Walter Ginn.
And what year were you born?
I was born on the 13th of May 1936.
And whereabouts was that?
In Oxford.
And could you just tell me in one sentence, really, what your parents did during their working lives?
My mother didn't work apart from looking after the family. My father worked in the motor industry. He was working in Oxford until 1939, when we then moved back to Kent, which was the beginning of the war.
And what did he do then?
He worked in Vickers for a short time until the war was over, and then he went back to what he did previously, which was coach trimming, which in layman's terms is upholstery, etc., in cars and coaches and things like that.
And so you went to school in both Kent and Oxford, did you?
I didn't know. I was only three when I left Oxford, and I went to school in Kent.
Oh, sorry. I thought...
Left in 1939, we left...
Yeah,
Oxford.
Sorry, I thought when you said he went back to... I thought you meant you went back to Oxford.
No, he went back to Kent.
Fine, okay. And in your working life, I think this is going to come up a lot because obviously you've got lots of exciting, relevant things to tell us. What was your main occupation in your working life?
I was a consulting engineer. I started at the age of 16 after leaving school and went to... private practice in the City of London. I believe he was the only private consulting engineer in the City of London, near St Paul's. Name was Jack Leslie Wheeler. I started there as their first trainee, not having to pay to be trained. And subsequently ended up as a partner. He having died in 1960, and I carried on, and it didn't leave the practice. I carried on throughout my working life.
So you started there in 1952.
Until 1996, when I retired. At the age of 60, I would have stayed on a bit longer, but I had been ill various times earlier in my life, and I decided that I would go as soon as I could.
And whereabouts was the practice based?
The practice was based in the City of London originally, and it was there. Mr. Wheeler started in 1922. He died in 1960, very suddenly. He was in the office on the Friday and he died on the Saturday, which left another partner who was much younger, which is one of the reasons I stayed on, because he needed us. By this time, I was heavily involved with the practice, and the younger partner died in 1970, at the age of 50.
Okay, well, let's rewind then to your earlier years with joining the company, because obviously you were really in the thick of it for our purposes of talking about the Temple of Mithras excavation.
Yes.
So, could you tell me your first involvement with the site, or how you came across it in the first place?
Well, the actual practice, and Owen Campbell Jones and other people, Hurst Pearson Malcolm, who did the foundation work, it had actually been planned before I joined the practice. There was a lot of controversy about the height of the building, proposed height.
Bucklesbury House we're talking about.
Bucklesbury House. And the actual limit was put on it at 204.6 above ordnance datum. And I do have a copy of the City Press, which shows that planning application. And so we were already involved on the project when I joined it, but we hadn't done very much. So at the time that the Mithras Temple was found, we'd already started the excavation, or the contractor had. And I was, because we were only a few hundred yards away from the site, I was there on a regular basis taking things backwards and forwards, looking at things and taking some of our information there.
Golly, that's absolutely wonderful. It's great to have somebody like you come out of the woodwork, having seen a feature on the news.
Yes, and the comical bit about it was that at that particular time, animal, vegetable and mineral was one of the best programmes on television at that time, and everybody was interested in archaeology and things like that because of the programme. And our practice was called J.L. Wheeler and Jupp. And the old Mr. Wheeler, who was then probably about 70 anyway, we were called to the site after the discovery, bearing in mind I'd been there quite a few times before. He said, "Oh, let's go down the site." So I went down with him. And when we arrived there, of course, there was all the people surrounding the site wanting to get in to look at it. And in those days, you just had a red and white barrier across, just a pole. And Mr. Wheeler, who was quite well known in the city,
Your Mr. Wheeler for your company?
My Mr. Wheeler, yeah. He walked down there with me, and he went to put his leg over this bar and immediately got stopped by one of the operatives saying, "You can't come in, you can't come in." So Mr. Wheeler said, I'm Wheeler. I can come in," assuming that everybody knew him as the City of London engineer. And this man said, "Oh, no, you're not." He said, "You don't look a bit like Mortimer Wheeler." And I then said, "It's all right, he's with me." Well, which time he then just walked in.
Is that because they knew you?
They knew me, yeah.
From visiting before?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a wonderful story.
That was funny.
That's fantastic.
Funny. It was funny. It wasn't funny for me at the time, because, you know, I was only 18.
Right.
I matured early. Yeah. Yeah.
So you were worried that all sorts of...
Well, no, there's been a lot of people there. I mean, you know, I came up from the sticks and, you know, to the city and working.
Sounds like you saved the day, as it turned out.
Yeah, it was quite funny. Yeah.
So you were going backwards and forwards, obviously before the site was discovered, in your role.
Oh, yes, and we were in the office doing the drawings and things like that, yeah.
Golly, that's wonderful. So what's the first thing you remember about the actual discovery of the temple?
Well, just being told, the office was told, and we went down there because we had to stop work. I mean, well, when I say we, I don't mean us personally. I mean the contract had to stop. And we then knew that people from the British Museum were coming down and everything had to stop while they excavated and did that sort of thing.
So what did you do during that period? Because obviously the site was open to the public for 2 weeks, so that presumably delayed...
Well, no, we were still carrying on with our calculations and drawings. I mean, bearing in mind there's a lot of work to do on that size of building. I think it was one of the biggest buildings going on at the time. We had to carry on doing the work, producing our drawings and calculations for the superstructure, and also feeding the foundation engineers with their information that they needed to finish off their work. So we were very busy. I mean, it took the pressure off a little bit, but we then thought we may have to, might have to redesign that particular part of the building to accommodate the temple in situ, which would have mean loss of floor space. And it was going to be quite complicated to do that. So I think there was probably a little bit of argument between the developer and the museum and people like that, that they just said, "We should just move it." So then it was taken apart and it was moved to another part of the site, which I could show you roughly where it was. I don't know whether you knew that. It had been moved once. Then it was moved. When we started doing Temple Court, we moved it down to the builder's yard. I think it was either in Kingston or Sutton, somewhere down there, Humphreys, out of town. And then it was brought back eventually where I designed the structure to reinstate the temple.
Right, so you were involved with where it was moved to and opened in 1962 on Queen Victoria Street.
Yes, but yes, we put it actually on the forecourt. And the building then, what was now Temple Court, was called Cancelling House to start with. Then they renamed it Temple House, and lastly it was called Temple Court because of the court with the temple on. So it changed the names while we were preparing the drawings anyway. But I knew it had been moved, and you know, we had to move it to build Temple Court.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I didn't understand though that you were involved with it throughout that period.
Yeah. Well, I was only involved. I mean, I knew it had been moved.
Yeah.
I mean, I know where the stones are marked and whatever. And then when it came back, I mean, I was then well involved with the business. I was probably a partner then, or no, I wasn't. I was an associate partner, but I was virtually running the project Temple Court, and but I designed the structure that the temple sat on in its final resting place.
I see.
Not its final resting place.
As it turns out, yeah. Yeah. Okay, and who were you liaising with during that period of drawing up the design for where it was going to be moved to?
I think it just came through, you know, this is what it is, because we had a drawing of it. So it was just a question of where it was going to be put. And then they said it was going to be put there. And in fact, on that triangular forecourt, it was the longest bit that it could go on, apart from going into the building, you know. So it just happened to be by the side of the ramp, but higher up above the car park.
I see.
And then Dove Brothers constructed it. Did you know that, who it was? They were quite a specialist company, contractors. They did a lot of church work and things like that, and stonework. And they built a scaffold umbrella and sheeted umbrella, and they did all the work undercover, and then a grand opening.
And did you go to the opening?
I wasn't invited to the opening, but I don't know when it was. But probably, I'd seen enough of it, I think.
Yeah, and I suppose you're so busy doing
it. And it was there forever then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you could see it another time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Mm. So, okay, going back to what for us is this quite critical period of the 2 weeks when the site was open to the public in 1954, you said that, you know, you got wind of the fact that, you know, there was some concern about if your building or the Bucklesbury House might need to be redesigned in that part of the building. Mm. Mm. How much were you aware of what was going on in the press and with the government, all this to-ing and fro-ing about, are we going to destroy the temple? Are we going to move it? Yeah, are we going to leave it there? Mm. Were you very much sort of in the know about all that? Or
I was just an employee at the time. It wasn't going to affect me financially or anything like that. You know, it wasn't forefront. You know, I had other things to do as well. I was still going to college one day a week and in the evenings, and just doing basically what I was told and not be ordered in those days.
Yeah, I suppose if you're 18, you keep your head down, really.
Yeah, yeah. But it was it was interesting, yeah, very interesting.
And did you get wind of your sort of seniors being a bit anxious about what might happen, or...?
Oh, yeah, I mean, Mr. Wheeler himself, I mean, he was concerned that we wouldn't be able to keep, you know, if we've got to redesign the building, we've got to really get on with it and you know, do something, same as the Hurst, Pierce and Malcolm would. You know, they were doing the foundations after all, you know, ours was, we had to give them loadings for the foundations, but it would mean us redesigning some of it, not all of it, but some of it.
Sure. So there was probably a bit of an atmosphere in the office for a while.
Yes, yeah. Excitement as well, I think. A bit of excitement.
Yeah, because it sounds like it would have been this challenge, which most people welcome a challenge, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have been much of a challenge to me at that time because I wasn't designing stuff as such. I mean, I didn't really start doing much until about 1957, I think, the first time I took on a project on my own.
Sure, okay. Mm. And going back to the discovery of the actual head of Mithras and the public interest, did it do anything for you? Did you catch sight of the head of Mithras at the time?
Well, of course, some of the other bits and pieces that were being pulled out and cleaned up with paintbrushes, you know, this sort of thing. Yeah. But, you know, there was... lot of other people there. I mean, the archaeologists were there. And, you know, we didn't actually go trudging around them. You just let them get on with it.
Yeah. And what did you think about all these thousands and thousands of people turning up? Did that seem surprising to you? Do you remember noticing?
Well, it was very sudden. It was extremely sudden that they all turned up. What would it have been like nowadays? I don't know. Would it have been worse? Would there be more people? I don't know.
Well, that's what we're interested in, sort of getting people's views on. I mean, my very sort of, my take on it, which is neither here nor there in a way, really, is from this perspective, it seems to be about that point in history. You know, that it was a few years after the war and...
Yes, yeah, that's right. I mean, there were other things that were more important. There was a shortage of steel, of course, you know, they only just got some steelwork going. And there was a shortage of clay bricks. That was another problem. We had to redesign the floors, the traditional Maori, because the whole building was designed in traditional pre-war days, which we've now gone much beyond. But there was a shortage of clay, so the bricks. So the floor, hollow tile floors we originally were going to design for, we couldn't, because we couldn't get the clay tiles to do it. So we actually designed our own type of floor, which was like a upturned egg box. And that you see that now all over the world. If you look up in some big buildings, you see it like an upturned egg box. Well, that's we designed that. And that I think that's the first one.
And this was the floor for
Bucklersbury House and Temple Court, yes. Yeah. We had steel trays made. Instead, now they use fibreglass, plastic, but we used steel trays, recoverable, and we redesigned the whole building on that.
And would you have any photos of the building once it was finished?
I've got in my workshop there two drawings we had in my office. See, we moved our office from the City of London when Jupp died. Suddenly in 1970, he was only 50, and two of us carried on there. We were associate partners and we carried on as full partners together and carried the business on. For 4 years we stayed in the city, and then we thought, well, we might have to get out sometime, we might as well go now. And so we moved to St Albans, and we were still, I retired from there in 1996, leaving two other partners, and then one of the other partners has since retired, and the third one, he's now sort of basically closed the office, but he does do occasional work from where he is, wherever he might be.
I'm just going to interrupt you, Dudley, sorry, but I think I'll just push the taxi back by 10 minutes, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Now, that's the people involved. You've got those, haven't you? The architects Campbell Jones and Ronald Fielding with us, and Hurst Pearson Malcolm, court advisor Robert Stevens.
Well, again, I would think so, but I would rather check it with my colleagues, because that, you know, they have a lot more information than me.
If you want to take that, you can.
Okay, well, I'm going to start listing what I'm borrowing from you. So there's a typed sheet that Dudley's written out saying who was involved with the building of the Bucklesbury House and the design. There's a temple bar. What? How did you describe this?
It's the newsletter for the Legal and General.
Yes, from September 1962, volume 2, number 22. There's a cartoon from City Press, 1954 planning restriction. You're absolutely right, it would be tragic to lose this view of St Paul's. That's really funny. Legal and General Gazette, March 1976, about the recited Temple of Mithras. And then I've got, at the moment, would that be three photos of the
The site? Just bits and pieces, nothing.
So this will be probably 1954 prior to September?
That would be after the Mithras.
Okay.
It's just stuff that I've kept. Yeah. And that one. That's the City Press. That one, I don't think this is very relevant. That's only to do with Temple Court. Much later.
Yeah, I understand that, but wonder if it would be okay to get my colleagues to check it.
Yeah.
And then there's City Press from Friday the 19th of June 1953, which has a drawing in it, and it's entitled The Battle of Bucklesbury. I won't open it. And then we've got Legal and General Assurance Society Limited laying a foundation plaque at Society's new head office building in Queen Victoria Street, 2nd of June 1960. And then, of course, your actual drawing.
Yes.
So do you just want to describe that for the record?
Yes, the drawing is a very large site plan of the whole of the site prior to any work being carried out, showing the damaged buildings after the war and various other things, and mainly pavement levels and road levels surrounding the site. This would enable the architect to produce his drawings.
And you, when you're talking about the site, you're of course talking about the Bucklesbury House site.
Bucklesbury House, Temple Court, the whole complex.
And you said it was drawn by...
It was drawn by an employee of Humphreys Limited called Ted Abbas, and it was the project. That particular project was on behalf of Owen Campbell Jones, the architect.
And it was drawn in May 1951, we think, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
Fruit. It's a fruit. I do have outside, in my workshop, hanging on the wall, two framed pictures, one of Bucklesbury House taken from Cannon Street, looking down, and one of a model of Temple Court with the temple on the front.
Okay, so perhaps we should have a quick peek at those before I leave. And the other thing you were talking about was the design inside Bucklesbury House, and you said you've got pictures of some of those things as well. Talking about the floor.
Oh no, I haven't got any drawings of that now. I mean, when the office, we had all the drawings, full size, all the calculations, everything, in our own archives, until I retired, really. And then once they left St Albans, I think they've probably been destroyed, because that's only the last couple of years. So there was no point in keeping them. Buildings have gone.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we were just talking the other day about whether people had photos of the inside of Bucklesbury House, but it sounds like you haven't.
No, not at all. I mean, I was going there on a regular basis, right, for 44 years, because anything to do with the buildings, either of those buildings, either alterations, loading calculations for tenants, things like that, bearing in mind Bucklesbury was a multi-tenancy building. Over the years, lots of people have changed. They've been computers, for instance, is one thing. We had to do quite a lot of work with computer installations. And so I was going there regularly right up until I retired. No one else knew anything about the building structurally. Even the district surveyor didn't have records. But when it was designed, they didn't have the staff to actually check. So we did it on a verbal basis and site visits, etc.
So you were the keeper of the knowledge all that time. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
Golly, how wonderful.
But it's all gone now.
Yes, the passing of time these cycles seem to come around quickly, don't they?
Yep.
Okay, well, how shall I put this away safely?
Well, I'll fold that drawing up.
Yeah.
Oh, it's an envelope here, but I'll get you another envelope.
Okay.
And you need someone with a bit of knowledge. A youngster won't be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they might put it out on the board, on a bench, and leave it, and the sun will
Yeah, no, I'll be careful with that. So it's not to be exposed to direct light, and we're to open up as little as possible.
So have you got an old retainer there?
I would imagine.
Right,
yeah.
And because it's so long, I've folded it in half. I did have a little black bag there.
From where Cannon Street Station is, looking down there, so the actual temple was, I think, down there somewhere, underneath that block.
Oh, wow.
Because we've already built another story on some of these, because, well, air conditioning plant, and I designed that lot as well. I don't know whether this is still there. Nearest I got to it was the other end, when the Beijing Olympics team came back and they processed along.
Oh, right. Street. Yeah.
The nearest I got to it.
So you said the other building you're involved with that's been knocked down?
Oh, well, the Granite House just around the corner, just opposite the station, just around the corner there. Yeah. But this was before they actually did the... Well, this must have been done, I don't know, there's no date on it. This was a model, so it was before they finished it. There will be a date. That was, obviously, the building's finished.
Hmm.
And that was taken before they built that big tower block over the Cannon Street Station.
Right. Yeah,
because,
I don't know what
because
that
we
is.
Did a computer installation for one of the original tenants, which was Lloyd's Bank, and that was up on about the second floor, somewhere up here.
Mm-hmm.
And in the main block, did a lot of work when the building was going up for that.
Yeah.
And then they moved over here and had their own building.
Uh-huh.
But mm-hmm. There was lots of pubs in there.
I can imagine.
They kept all the pubs. There was the Deacon, which is along Walbrook, the Cooper's Arms. I think there were about three pubs. They just kept those. When they demolished all those buildings, they kept the pubs, and rebuilt them, you know, kept the names. So, it was quite interesting.
Well, it must have been fascinating.
Mm.
Yeah. And so much rebuilding to be doing in that period.
Yeah. Endless. Oh, yeah. Never ended. Well, we did a lot of war damage work because we were in the city and Wheeler was of that age. Which is one of the reasons why we got quite a lot involved in without the districts of ours didn't worry about us, because they knew we had all the archive work going back to the 1800s, you see.
Right, yeah,
And if we told them something was right, they usually believed us.
That's a nice position to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if you start reading a book about, a contemporary book about something like Dickens, it was how it was, isn't it? I mean, you read Dickens, and that is how it is, And I mean, Jack Wheeler could have been reading Dickens live, when it was first published. So that's the historical bit, And all the building work that was going on then, and the London Building Act and regulations, they were all. We had the documentation that was current at the time. Now you might get it from a museum or something, or some other archive, but we had it in the office and we were using it on a day-to-day basis. Any building got damaged during the war, we would have the right information about the structure to reinstate it. It sounds complicated, but it's not really. Oh, it's a lovely day.
It's gorgeous, isn't it?
This is what I was worried about. You see, the building's been going on for months here, and... I thought perhaps the skip lorry might come.
Oh, yeah, but it was very peaceful, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's very peaceful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.